Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Vision of the Future, Book 2 in the two-volume series, The Hand of Thrawn, by Timothy Zahn. The Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera slid through the black of space, its only companion the silent gas giant world of Pezzatin far below. Admiral Pillion was standing at the forward viewport, gazing out at the dead planet, when Captain Ardiff arrived on the bridge. "Report from Major Hatch, Admiral," he said briskly. "All damage from that pirate attack has been repaired. Your ship is back to full fighting readiness." "Thank you, Captain," Pillion said. "Oh, and the sensor stealth assault shuttle you sent on the attacker's escape vector also just checked in. Still no trace." Pellion nodded. "Have them try one more system. We can transmit that far without relays. If they haven't picked up the trail by then, order them back."
"Yes, sir," Ardiff murmured.
Even without looking, Pellion could sense Ardiff's hesitation. "A question, Captain?" he prompted.
"It's this communications blackout, sir," Ardiff said. "I don't like being so completely out of contact this way. It's like being blind and deaf. And frankly, it makes me nervous."
"I don't much like it myself," Pellion conceded. "But the only way is to make contact with the outside universe, or to either transmit to an Imperial relay station or punch our way onto the Holonet. And the minute we do either, everyone from Coruscant to Bastion will know we're here. If that happens, we'll have more than the occasional pirate gang lining up to take potshots at us." And, he added silently, it would be the end of any chance for a quiet meeting between himself and Bel Iblis, assuming the General was indeed willing to talk.
"Yes, sir," Ardiff said. "But that raises the question of how long we're going to stay here."
Pellion looked out the viewport at the stars. Yes, that was indeed the question. How long should they wait here in the middle of nowhere in the hope that they could end this war with the New Republic with a shred of territory and dignity still intact, in the hope that they could finally have peace?
2 weeks, he said. "We'll give Bel Iblis another 2 weeks to respond to our offer."
"Yes, sir," Ardiff said, his tone making it clear that he didn't share Pellion's confidence. "And if Bel Iblis doesn't come within that time frame?"
Pellion pursed his lips.
"We'll decide then."
Ardiff hesitated, then took half a step closer to his superior.
"You really believe this is our best hope, sir, don't you?"
Pellion shook his head.
"No, Captain," he murmured. "I believe it's our only hope."
The wedge of approaching Sinar patrol ships broke in perfect formation to both sides, and the Imperial Star Destroyer Relentless glided smoothly between the reforming clusters toward its designated orbital position.
"Very impressive," Moff Dizra growled to the slim man beside him. "I trust you didn't haul me all the way out here just to watch the Kroktarian Home Defense Forces maneuvers."
"Patience, Your Excellency," Major Groden Tierce said quietly at his side. "I told you, we had a surprise for you."
Dizra felt his lip twist.
"Yes, that's all," Tierce had said. "And as for Flim..."
Dizra shifted his gaze to the Admiral's chair. Their tame con man was sitting there, bold as brick brass, in his blue skin makeup, glowing red eye surface inserts, and his white Grand Admiral's uniform. The absolute laser-trimmed image of Grand Admiral Thrawn. A masquerade solidly believed by every Imperial aboard the Relentless from Captain Dorja on down. Trouble was, there weren't any Imperials on the planet below them, far from it. Proktar was, in fact, deep in New Republic territory, with every bit as much military firepower as one would expect such a world to have.
Transmission from the surface, Admiral,
the comm officer called from the portside crew pit. It's Lord Superior Bosmihi, chief of the Unified Factions.
On speaker, Lieutenant,
Thrawn said.
Lord Superior Bosmihi, this is Grand Admiral Thrawn. I received your message. What may I do for you?
Dizra frowned at Tyrs.
They called us, he muttered.
Tyrs nodded, a small but satisfied smile playing around his lips. He said, listen.
We offer you greeting, Grand Admiral Thrawn, and we congratulate you most heartily on your triumphal return.
Thank you,
Thrawn said smoothly. The Bosmihi continued soberly.
There is no longer any order emanating from Coruscant. No focused walls, no clear structures, no discipline. 1,000 different alien species tuck the galaxy in 1,000 different directions. The Empire is said to be weak, yet I perceive that you still have great strength. On behalf of the unified factions of the Kroftari people, I would like to petition you for readmission to the Empire.
Dizra looked at Tyrs, feeling his jaw drop a few millimeters.
Readmission?
He hissed. Tyrs smiled back. Surprise, Your Excellency.
On behalf of the Empire, I accept your petition,
Thrawn said.
You no doubt have a delegation standing ready to negotiate the details.
Yes, my delegation does indeed await your pleasure.
Tyrs turned to Dizra.
Droktar's the first, but it won't be the last.
We already have transmissions from 20 other systems whose governments would like Grand Admiral Thrawn to drop in for a chat. Dizra snorted.
Yes, but is gaining a system or two worth the risk of possibly scaring Coruscant into action? What's going on that you aren't telling me?
Tyrs seemed to measure him with his eyes.
All right, he said. Have you ever heard the phrase, the hand of Thrawn?
Dizra paused, intrigued.
No, but go ahead.
I heard Thrawn mention it once aboard the Chimera, in the context of the Empire's ultimate and total victory.
You mean like a superweapon?
Dizra asked carefully.
I don't think so, Tyrs said. Superweapons were more the Emperor's or Admiral Dala's style, not Thrawn's.
I see only two likely possibilities. First, remember that above all else, Thrawn was a master strategist. What could be more his style than to leave behind a master plan for victory?
Dizra nodded, then asked, And the second?
Tyrs stared at Dizra and continued.
Or else, the ultimate victory lies with a person called the Hand. Either way, there's someone out there who has something we want.
Dizra smiled tightly. Suddenly, it was clear as polished transparasteel.
And so, in order to lure that someone into the open, you've decided to parade our decoy around a little.
Tyrs inclined his head slightly. Under the circumstances, I think the risks are worth taking.
Perhaps, Dizra murmured. It assumes, of course, that it wasn't all just a load of tall talk.
The corner of Tyrs's lip twitched.
I was aboard the Chimera with the Grand Admiral for several months, Dizra. Before that, I watched him from the Emperor's side for nearly 2 years. Never in all that time did I hear him make a promise he wasn't able to carry out. If he said the Hand of Thrawn was the key to ultimate victory, then it was. You can count on it.
Although they hovered over Batui, there were no planets visible from the bridge of the Imperial Star Destroyer Tyrannic. No planets, no asteroids, no ships, no stars. Nothing peeked through the ship's cloaking shield. They'd been flying like this for a month now, completely blind and deaf to the rest of the universe outside their insular existence. There was a step on the command walkway beside him.
Preliminary report from Probe 2, sir,
Intelligence Chief Oisan said.
The warship count around Botawi has gone up to 56.
Nalgol shook his head in wordless amazement. From the beginning, he'd had doubts about this mission. The idea that the Bothan homeworld would become a focal point for any military activity, let alone a confrontation of this magnitude, had been ludicrous on the face of it. But Grand Admiral Thrawn himself had apparently come up with this scheme, and plagued if old Red Eyes hadn't been right.
Oisan seemed to hesitate.
I don't mean to pry into top-level affairs, sir, but at some point, I'm going to need to know what's going on out there if I'm to do my job properly.
I wish I could help you, Colonel,
Nalgol said candidly.
But I really don't know a lot myself.
But you did receive a special briefing from Grand Admiral Thrawn at Moff Dizra's palace, didn't you?
Oisan persisted.
It hardly qualified as a briefing,
Nalgol said.
He basically gave us our assignments and told us to trust him. Our part is simple. We wait until all those ships out there have battered themselves and the planet into as much rubble as they're going to, and then we come out of cloak and finish them off.
Oisan nodded, then asked,
I wonder, sir, how we got all those ships to face off like that.
Best guess is that rumor you picked up from your fringe contacts just before we cloaked. That thing about a group of Bothans having been involved in the destruction of Kamis.
From somewhere in the deep recesses of his mind came an insistent warbling. And with a jolt, Luke Skywalker snapped out of his Jedi hibernation trance.
Okay, R2, he told the droid, as he rolled out of his bunk and took a moment to reorient himself. Right, he was aboard Mara Jade's ship, the Jade's Fire, heading toward the Nuran system, the system where Mara herself had disappeared nearly 2 weeks ago. Are we almost there? The droid twittered an affirmative that was echoed by Mara's V1 pilot droid, who had been flying the Fire ever since Luke and R2 had come aboard. Go back to the docking port and make sure the X-Wing's ready to fly, he instructed the little droid, as he headed toward the cockpit. He gave the V1 droid instructions, and 2 minutes later he eased the X-Wing out of the Fire's docking bay, and with a burst of starlines, they were off. When the X-Wing left hyperspace, he could see a planet below. That's the place, all right, Luke confirmed, gazing out at the dark planet hanging in space in front of them. We'll take the same route in that Mara did, down the canyon to the cave where she disappeared. Luke stretched out to the Force, searching for any sense of Mara. But there was nothing. They landed outside the cave, where, perched on a thorn-leaf bush not 3 meters away, were small, slack-winged, brown-gray creatures, watching him. The lower slit on one of the creature's faces opened and emitted a loud chirp.
Who are you?
Luke blinked in surprise. The creature chirped again.
Who are you?
It was the creature who'd spoken. Only it hadn't spoken, not really. But then how had Luke understood? And then abruptly it came to him. While he couldn't understand the creature's actual chirping language, he was pulling the essence of the communication from its mind via the Force. This implied that the creatures were at least marginally Force-sensitive. I'm Luke Skywalker, he said, stretching toward the creature with the Force. Jedi Knight of the New Republic. Who are you?
We are the Comtae. What do you do here, Jedi Knight Skywalker?
I'm looking for a friend, Luke said. She landed near here nearly 2 weeks ago and then disappeared. Do you know where she is?
We will take you to her. We have been hiding her from the Threateners. Although I fear she may have misunderstood our intentions, we are not able to communicate with her.
It was on her 15th day in the darkness of the Nuran cave when Mara Jade awoke to discover a rescuer had finally arrived. It was not, however, any of the potential rescuers she would have expected.
Mara?
She sat up suddenly in her bedroll, blinking her eyes reflexively open, despite the fact that in the pitch darkness there was absolutely nothing to see. The sense of someone calling to her had been wordless, but as clear as if her name had been spoken aloud. She stretched out with the Force, and the sense of his identity came drifting into her. It was Luke. And apparently some of the Minok-like creatures who had hauled her through this labyrinth in the first place were acting as guides. I'm over here, Mara called, standing up and waving her glow rod.
You sure took your time. Sorry, he said dryly, making his way to her. We couldn't find the local airspeed or hire stand and had to walk. You look good. How have they been treating you?
Mara shrugged. Ambiguously, she said. At first I thought I was being held prisoner, but they didn't seem to mind if I moved around the immediate area, so now I'm not sure what's going on.
Yes, my Kumke guides told me you have trouble understanding them, Luke said. It sounds to me like the reason they brought you in here was to keep you safe. They say they needed to protect you because you were being hunted by the Threateners from the High Tower.
Mara frowned. The Threateners?
That's the Kumke name for them, Luke said. Beings similar to us, they say, and allied with the Empire. I suspect they may be associated with Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Thrawn?
We picked up a transmission on the way in. Thrawn's name was buried in it.
Sounds like the same transmission Card and I picked up on the errant venture. That's what I came here to investigate in the first place, until your Kumke friends took it upon themselves to keep me safe, as you've just informed me.
Well, these Threateners must know you're here. And according to the Kumke, they've been scouring the planet looking for you. Some of them, by the way, are notable for the unusual color of their skin.
Mara nodded knowingly. Let me guess. Blue.
Well, it doesn't take a hyperspace drive designer to conclude that Grand Admiral Thrawn and this place are not exactly unknown to each other. Which leads me to something I've been wondering about. Could the Hand of Thrawn have something to do with this place?
The Hand of Thrawn? Luke questioned. Like on the damaged data card your sister recovered near Mount Tantus. It was labeled the Hand of Thrawn.
I don't like the sound of that, Luke said.
No one else who's heard about it does either,
Mara agreed grimly. Luke began to fill Mara in on what had been going on while she had been in the cave. Things are getting very nasty out there, he said grimly.
Let me guess. Kamus and the Bothans?
Kamus, the Bothans, and a thousand worlds using Kamus as an excuse to pick up on old grudges against their neighbors, he told her. And frankly, I'm starting to wonder if there's any way at all of stopping it. Still, if there's some connection between this planet and Thrawn, we should try to find out what it is.
One of the Kumke spoke up.
We will assist you. We hear the threatening. The Kumke fly in the shadow of their talons. We would seek to have this threat removed, if you are willing.
Can you lead us to the High Tower of which you spoke? The Kumke conferred.
We will take you there, but you cannot bring your flying machine. You would be seen. Instead, we must fly there. I and my friends will carry you, and we will not be seen.
Mara and Luke exchanged glances. Are you sure? Luke asked. There aren't very many of you, and we're not as light as we look, and we'll need to take R2, too.
I and my friends will carry you there,
the Kumke repeated. At Admiral Akbar's personal request, General Garm Bel Iblis was in the communications blister on the New Republic dreadnought Peregrine.
I understand your concerns, General,
Akbar said, his face filling the comm display.
And I do not disagree with your assessment. But you must not be stationed over Botawi at this time. Any serious New Republic presence over Botawi at this point would be construed as support of the Bothans against their critics. And in any case, President Gavrasum has already selected another task for you.
More important than keeping the peace over Botawi?
Far more important,
Akbar assured him.
If Botawi is the flashpoint, then it is the Kamus document which is the spark. President Gavrasum has therefore concluded that the New Republic's best chance of diffusing the controversy is to obtain an intact copy of the document,
Akbar continued.
To that end, you are to proceed immediately to Ortrasi, where you will begin assembling a force for an information raid on the Imperial Ubiquirid base at Yagamina.
With all due respect, Admiral, Bel Iblis said,
President Gavrison must be joking. Yaga Minor is probably the most heavily defended system in Imperial or New Republic space.
The President is well aware of the challenges involved,
Akbar said.
I'll be honest. I don't like this any more than you do. But it has to be tried. If war breaks out over this issue, we don't have enough ships or troops to either force or maintain a peace. The entire New Republic could conceivably collapse into civil war.
Bel Iblis stared at the display.
Yes, sir, he said. Unfortunately, I'm forced to agree with your assessment.
Good, Akbar said. You and your task force are to leave Bothawi immediately for Ord Trussi. I'll be quietly sending you the rest of your ships over the next 2 weeks, at which time I expect you to have a battle plan formulated and ready to go. Good luck, General.
You air to the starboard,
the Tavorian female at the wildcard sensor station called. Seated in the back of the bridge, out of the way, Shada Dukal mentally shook her head. Negotiating an asteroid field was never an easy task, but it seemed to her the Tagorian was getting herself too worked up over the whole operation. There was a particularly jostling bounce as the large asteroid was avoided.
Oh, my!
A gloomy voice murmured from Shada's right. She turned to look at the C-3PO protocol droid strapped into the seat next to her. He was staring at the viewport, wincing with every swerve.
You all right?
I'm sorry, Mistress Shada, he said, managing to sound prim and miserable at the same time. I've never entirely enjoyed space travel, but Mistress Leia did insist that I serve you on this mission.
It should be over soon. Just try to relax.
She turned back to observe the bridge crew. Maybe it wasn't just the asteroid field that was making the Tagorian nervous. Maybe she was merely sensing and reacting to the nervousness the captain himself was feeling. Shada shifted her gaze to focus on Talon Card's profile. He was hiding it well, actually, with only cheek and jaw muscles betraying the tension there. But Mistral training included the reading of faces and body language. And to her eyes, Card's steadily growing apprehension was as obvious as a navigational beacon. After much pressing, Shada had convinced Card that in order for her to be an effective participant in this mission, she had to be familiar with at least the basics of his and Cardus's history. He had finally relented and explained that Cardus had been one of the most powerful and ruthless smugglers in the galaxy, rivaling even the Hutts. But then, 20 years ago, as his organization peaked, Cardus, along with a huge data library, had mysteriously vanished. Card had taken over the organization virtually overnight, and he was convinced that Cardus, the most calculating man he knew, was lying in wait to make him pay for what some might interpret as Card's treachery. If Card was this nervous now, what, Shada wondered uneasily, would Card be like by the time they actually reached Exocron? And they approached this mysterious Georges Cardus character to inquire about an authentic copy of the Kamis document.
The sixth sumptuous hour of the 15th glorious day of the yearly Kanshan Sector Conference now begins,
the herald intoned.
And let us hail and magnify our glorious visitors from the New Republic,
the herald continued, waving his hand in an expansive gesture toward where Han and Leia were stretched out.
May their sublime wisdom, awesome courage, and magnificent honor enlighten the sky above our gathering.
You forgot our uplifted eyebrows, Han muttered under his breath, as the assembly roared out their greetings.
It's better than Coruscant,
Leia chided him gently, as she half rose and waved.
Come on, Han.
It's only for the rest of the day. You can put up with it that long. Tomorrow, we'll head over to Pakrik Minor and get all that peace and quiet you promised me. Carib. With a wince of tired knees, Carib DeVist got up from where he'd been crouching, careful not to bump into either of the two rows of tall grain pressing close around him. I'm over here, Sabman, he called.
I see you, Sabman called back. Kareb eyed his brother. And what wonderful news have you brought me? Sabman's lips compressed. We just got a confirmation from Bastion. New Republic High Counselor Leia Organa Solo is definitely over on Pakrik Major. And the attack on her is definitely on. Kareb glanced up at the half-lit planet hanging in the sky overhead. They must be crazy, he said. Attack a New Republic High Counselor just like that? I don't think they really cared who they got to attack, so long as it was a New Republic official, Sabman said. Did this come over Grand Admiral Thrawn's personal authorization? I don't know, Sabman said. The notice didn't say. But it has to have come from him, doesn't it? I mean, if he's in command, then he's in command. I suppose so, Kareb conceded reluctantly. So, there it was. The war was about to be brought suddenly and violently to the Pakrik system. Right to their doorstep. And the long wait was over. The quiet existence of Imperial Sleeper Cell Gent 44 was about to come to an end. You say, we're the backup. Who's the primary? I don't know, Sabman said. Some tag team in from Bastion for the occasion, I'd guess. And when is it supposed to happen? Tomorrow, Sabman said. Organa Solo and her husband are supposed to be coming over here to Minor once the conference breaks up. Kareb grimaced. I suppose even Solo's luck has to run out sooner or later. Pellion was in his quarters, pondering the continued and frustrating lack of response to his peace offer on the New Republic's part, when the call from Captain Ardiff came in.
Admiral, this is Ardiff.
The Chimera's captain's voice came.
Lieutenant Mavron has returned from his scouting mission. He reports, sir, that he has a vector on our attackers.
Have him report to Ready Room 14 as soon as he docks, he instructed Ardiff. I'll meet you there.
Ardiff was waiting with Mavron in the Ready Room when Pellion arrived.
Ah, Lieutenant. Welcome home. A vector, you said?
Yes, sir, Mavron said. The Holonet relay at Horska did indeed still have their records for transmissions from this area just after that raid against us. He nodded toward the datapad.
The one I marked struck me as the most interesting.
Pellion felt his jaw tighten as he found the lieutenant's mark.
Bastion. So, it was an Imperial behind that attack.
There's more, Mavron said. The original endpoint was Bastion, but then it got relayed a few more times and wound up somewhere in the Kroktar system.
Kroktar system? Ardiff said, frowning. That's deep in New Republic territory. What would someone from Bastion be doing there?
I wondered that too, Mavron said, his voice suddenly grim. So I stopped off at Corsito on the way back here and pulled a copy of the Tri-Nebulon for that day. If the timings are correct, a few hours after that transmission, the unified factions of Kroktar announced that a treaty had been negotiated between themselves and the Empire. The mediator of record was Grand Admiral Thrawn.
An icy chill ran up Pellion's back.
That's impossible, he said, his voice sounding strange in his ears. Thrawn is dead.
Yes, sir, Mavron said, nodding. But according to the report...
I was there, Pellion thundered. I watched him die.
To calm himself, Pellion looked down at his hands. Old hands, gnarled with age and darkened by the sunlight of a thousand worlds. He turned to Ardiff, speaking softly.
I was with Thrawn for just over a year. I was his senior fleet officer, his student.
He hesitated.
Perhaps even his confidant. I'm not sure. The point is that he chose the Chimera and me when he returned from the unknown regions. He didn't just pick us at random. He chose us.
No, there wasn't much Thrawn did at random, Ardiff agreed. From which it follows that if he's back...
That he's chosen someone else,
Pellion finished the other sentence, the words a sharp ache in his heart.
And there can be only a very few reasons why he would do that.
It can't be position, Ardiff said firmly. You are the Supreme Commander, after all. And it certainly can't be confidence. What's left?
Vision, perhaps,
Pellion suggested, tapping the datapad gently with a fingertip.
This peace proposal was my idea, you know. I argued for it, and I crammed it down the Moff's throats.
Moff Dizra was one of those who loudly and strongly opposed it. Moff Dizra of Bastion. Coincidence? Almost hesitantly, Ardiff reached over and touched Pelion's arm. If there's anything I can do... Pelion forced a smile.
Thank you, Captain. Don't worry, I'm not going to give up. Not until I've made every effort for a peace.
We are staying here, then? Ardiff asked.
For a few more days, Pelion said. I want to give Belyblis every possible chance.
And if he doesn't show?
Whether he does or not, we'll be going to Bastion next, Pelion said, hearing a touch of grimness in his voice. For this and other matters, Moff Dizra has some explaining to do.
That's it, Han said, nodding out the Falcon's viewport.
Backrick Minor. It's not much to look at, is it?
It's beautiful, Leia assured him, gazing out at the speckled blue-green world looming in front of them. A vacation. A real vacation. No Coruscant, no politics, no commerce issue. No ancient vengeances and smoldering wars. Not even any children, droids, or watchful Nogri underfoot. Just her and Han and silence. Leia was watching Packrick Minor come steadily closer when, on the control panel, the proximity warning began beeping. Crazy hot shots, Han muttered, frowning at the displays. What in space do they think they're doing? And with a shock, Leia suddenly understood. Han, look out, she blurted. He reacted instantly, old smuggler's reflexes combining with unquestioning faith in his wife's Jedi abilities to send the Falcon into a sharp sideways drop, just as a pair of brilliant red laser bolts sliced through space above them. Deflector! Han snapped, straightening out of his drop and throwing the ship into another turn. More laser bolts flashed past, closer this time. I'm heading to the upper quad, Han said. Get ready to take over. Leia winced. Up there, at the top of the ship, with nothing between him and the attacker's lasers except the Falcon's shields and the few centimeters of transparasteel. Leia gave him 5 seconds to get up the ladder, then spun the ship into a dip-and-turn maneuver designed to confuse an attacker into overshooting his target. But their pursuers were too smart to be taken in quite so easily. Another salvo shot past. This time, a few of the bolts spattering off the Falcon's deflector shield.
Okay, I'm here,
Han's voice announced over the intercom.
How are you doing?
Not as well as I'd like, Leia told him. The deadly game continued. Leia pushed the Falcon's sublight drive for all it was worth, twisting their tortured way towards the growing bulk of Packrick Minor. The hail of laser fire continued, most of it missing, but enough of the shots were connecting to become distinctly worrisome. Then Han's voice crowed from the intercom.
Got him. One down, two to go. She holding together?
Leia threw a quick look at the status boards. Yes, but just barely. Han grunted.
Sounds like it's time to try something clever. You ever done a smuggler's reverse?
Once or twice, Leia said cautiously. But I already tried a dip and turn, and that didn't do any good. They probably know all about smuggler's reverses.
Yeah, but you're not going to do it like they expect,
Han said.
You're going to swing the Falcon around like you're bringing her to a hard stop, but instead, you're going to keep spinning the rest of the way around until you're pointing at the planet again. Then gun her for all she's got. That ought to throw them off guard.
And if it doesn't?
Hang on. I'm not done,
Han said.
You give them a few seconds to hit their drives to try to catch up, and then you do a straight smuggler's reverse. With any luck, they'll shoot straight past us.
Or ram straight into us, Leia said with a grimace. You ready?
Ready. Do it now.
Bracing herself, Leia cut power and once again threw the Falcon into a spin. The attacking fighters swung back into view ahead of her, much closer this time and framed by the glow of their sublight drives flaring at full power. Killing the rotation, she threw power to the drive. The attackers tried. They really did. But even with their smaller size, they had a fair amount of inertia. And with that much power already committed, there was no possible way for them to stop. With their minds radiating frustration and helpless anger, they shot past the Falcon. Or rather, one of them did. The shock of the impact threw Leia out of her seat, the awful crunching sound from somewhere aft ringing in her ears.
Leia!
Han's voice shouted as the echoing noise was joined by a dozen warbling alarms.
Leia!
I'm all right, Leia called back over the din. Han, we've been hit.
Are we leaking air?
I don't know, Leia stammered. No, hull's still intact. But the drive and repulsor lifts...
I'll be down in a minute.
Han cut her off.
Just hold her together.
A blaze of light and color caught the corner of Leia's eye. She looked up from the controls, startled to see Patrick Minor rotating in front of her again. The last remaining fighter was framed in the center of the planetary disc, waggling evasively as he tried to kill his speed. But even as he swung back around, Han caught him dead center with a full salvo from the quad. With a brilliant multiple flash of fire, he was gone.
Okay, that does it,
Han called.
I'm on my way, sweetheart.
Leia nodded, returning her attention to the status boards. The sublight drive was out, but the indicators weren't showing how much actual damage they'd taken. When she looked up, she caught her breath. Patrick Minor, which had been uncomfortably large during the battle, now filled that whole section of the sky and was getting closer. She keyed for escape pod activation. Inoperative. She and Han were trapped in a ruined ship, plummeting toward the ground. Then, as the proximity warning began beeping again, a small craft roared past overhead. Han, she shouted. Another ship just... Leia took a ragged breath. A second ship had joined the first now, paralleling the Falcon above and to the right. A third had taken up position on the left. And the aft display showed one more flying directly above the sublight vents. Never mind, she told Han quietly. They're Imperial TIE interceptors, probably here to finish us off. Han stood beside her.
They're maneuvering, he said suddenly, pointing.
That one on the left, see? He's drifting out a little.
I see, Leia said, but what's he maneuvering for?
An instant later, she got her answer. In perfect unison, a bright yellow disc connected by a yellow cable shot out from the underside of each of the four ties, slamming solidly onto positions on the Falcon's upper hull. The cables went taut, and with a jerk that nearly knocked Han off his feet, the ship's descent abruptly slowed. Leia looked up at Han, saw her own bewilderment mirrored in his face.
I'll be sat on by a hut, he murmured. Grappling mags.
He sank into the pilot's chair, looked over at her.
I give up. What's going on?
Leia shook her head.
I don't know, she said, stretching out with the force. But there's something about these pilots, huh?
Like what?
I can't tell yet, Leia said again. But something very strange.
You're telling me.
He nodded toward the viewport.
Well, whatever it is, we ought to find out about it pretty soon. Looks like we're already coming down. A minute later, they reached hills directly in front of a cave. The TIEs slipped into full repulsor lift mode and eased the Falcon smoothly to the ground. They released the grappling mags and reeled them back in, and with practiced ease, lined up and began maneuvering one by one into the cave. One of the reception committee was waiting at the bottom of the ramp as Han unsealed the hatchway. He was a tall man, roughly Han's height, and strongly built, with dark eyes and a thick shock of long black hair. Hello, he said, nodding as they started down the ramp. His voice was genial enough, but there was a definite tension in his face and stance. That odd sense Leia had felt with the TIE pilots was back again, stronger than ever. Allow me to introduce myself. My name's Sabmin DeVist. Welcome to Imperial Sleeper Cell, Genth 44. Another man approached, about Sabmin's height and build, Leia noticed, with a shorter version of his same black hair and a well-trimmed beard. I am Kayrib DeVist, Counselor Organa Solo, he said as he crossed toward Sabmin. I'm sort of the spokesman for this group.
You're Sabmin's brother? Leia asked.
The family resemblance was obvious. Kayrib smiled faintly. That's what we tell people, he said. Actually, he stepped to Sabmin's side.
Seeing as you're a Jedi, I don't suppose it'll take you long. Leia frowned. The men who'd been examining the Falcon came out from under the ship and were standing silently in a row, also watching. Different clothing, different hairstyles, some with beards or mustaches, here and there a scar, but otherwise identical, completely identical.
Han?
Yeah, he said. And as she focused on his thoughts, she knew that he'd caught on, too.
Brothers, huh?
Carib shrugged uncomfortably. It sounds better, he said quietly, than clones. Han looked closely at each of them, then said,
Ah, I got it. Baron Fell, right?
Baron Suntir Fell? Leia asked, her stomach tightening with the sudden realization. Yes, that was who Carib reminded her of, a young Suntir Fell, once the Empire's top TIE pilot, and clearly the model for the men before her. Yet you saved our lives just now.
Don't give them too much credit on that one, Han growled. If they'd left us alone, we'd have hit dead center in this valley of theirs. You think their secret could have stood up to all the investigators who'd have swarmed over the place?
Yet our secret is now out anyway, Carib reminded him calmly. Depending on what you decide to do.
Maybe,
Han said, his hand dropping casually to hover beside his blaster.
Or maybe depending on what you plan to do.
Carib shook his head. You misunderstand. We have no intention of harming you, nor do we wish to fight for Grand Admiral Thrawn and the Empire.
Han's forehead wrinkled. So, what, you're surrendering?
Not exactly. Carib seemed to brace himself. What we want, all that we want, is your word that we'll be left alone here.
Han and Leia exchanged glances.
You want what? Leia asked.
Is that too high a price to ask for saving your lives? Sapman demanded.
Wait a minute, Han said, holding up a hand. Let me get this straight. You were created by Thrawn?
A muscle in Carib's cheek twitched, but he nodded. Correct.
This is Grand Admiral Thrawn we're talking about, right?
Han persisted.
The guy who wants to bring the Empire back? The guy who picked the best and most loyal TIE pilots, AT-AT drivers, and whatever, to run through his clone tanks?
Carib shook his head again. You still don't understand. Certainly Baron Fell was loyal to the Empire, or at least what the Empire was before insane butchers like Isard took over. In his era, the Empire stood for stability and order.
Which you in the New Republic could use a little more of at the moment, Sapman put in pointedly.
If Thrawn's really back, Leia said, then why would you want to sit this one out? Carib smiled sadly.
Because, for once, the great Grand Admiral Thrawn miscalculated, he said.
There was one thing Fell cherished more than personal glory or even galactic stability. He waved a hand around him, the gesture taking in the fields surrounding them. He loved the soil, he said quietly, and so do we.
She looked at Han as Carib looked around the fields. This is our life now, Counselor. Our land and our families are what matter to us.
Before Leia could respond, Sapman suddenly exclaimed,
We've got company.
Leia looked. Just clearing the distant hills, a low-flying craft was burning through the air toward them. That looks like our Nogri guard's cross shuttle.
The craft braked hard and came to a mid-air halt. A short gray figure dropped out the passenger side door, and the shuttle shot off again, swinging high over the cave and hills before circling back toward the group gathered around the Falcon.
Counselor,
Barkimp, one of Leia's Nogri guards, said gravely, recovering his balance quickly after his 3-meter drop.
The Bakrik defense monitor said that a ship had come under attack and surmised it was yours. We are pleased to find you uninjured. We inform you that there was an urgent transmission from Coruscant for you shortly after you departed Bakrik Major. Sakishak will bring it,
Barkimp said, nodding his head fractionally toward the shuttle now landing off to the side.
We, of course, did not attempt to decrypt it.
Have him bring it into the Falcon, please, she instructed. You wait here with Han and help Carib and the others get repairs organized.